Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club on FUBAR Radio.
What's going on?
I don't know what the fuck was going on there, but something was happening. Something was going on.
Did we just play a sound effect of a door closing and you closed the door? Oh, okay.
Well, so what like she'd done was she'd underestimated how long there was left. She thought it was 5 seconds, but there was 30 seconds. So she.
So we started early?
She stopped the previous show. No, we didn't start early. We started bang on time.
As always.
She started the previous show, she's finished the previous show, realised that she'd undershot herself.
Oh, no.
So she pressed the button where she played a sound effect of a door opening and closing.
While she opened and closed the door in real life.
Which actually was the exact... Well, it was confusing being in the room.
Are you going to put the sound effects on the podcast?
Which was... And then we actually started bang on time.
Right. So what you're saying is we've done our job. Straight bang on time.
We've absolutely...
Nailed that.
And I don't use this lightly. 1,000,000% done our job. not lightly. My name is
Slim Shady.
That's right. My name's Nick Helm.
My name's Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to
Five Star Fan Club.
Family Fun Club. Fan Club.
Family Fun Club.
Family. Yeah. Why not?
Five Star.
Well, we're a little bit, what do you call it, subdued this week.
Yeah, I think it's because, I don't know, I didn't know when we were starting. I was confused what was going on.
Well, that door didn't help, did it, opening and closing?
No.
I thought, wow, it's not normally a door opening and closing so close to air.
It's weird to have got my headphones on, the door opening and closed, to the sound effects of a creaky door opening and closing, like a horror film.
Well, sort of like a horror film, but it wasn't like a horror door. This literally means nothing to anyone that is listening later in the day, because the door sound effect won't be included.
No,
despite our protests and requests.
Yeah, maybe you should include it for context.
You can see I'm drinking. Keep talking.
Sorry, I was being really unprofessional.
You're just watching me drink a delicious
Coke
Zero. No calories. Zero sugar.
How is it? Did you get that from the shop?
I did get it from the shop. The shop have really upped that. First rule of fan club, tell your friends. Second rule.
Tell your friends.
Just tell your friends.
For the love of Mike.
For the love of Mike.
Yeah, that's what they say, didn't they?
Why Mike?
I don't know. It's one of those American things, I think, where they... Do you know, like in...
oh, hello, John.
When they don't want to say God, I think.
For the love of Mike.
For the love of Mike.
For the love of gosh.
Where they say things, don't they? Jeebus and all that.
Oh, heck. It's off the hook. I haven't watched much this week because I've been working my fingers to the bone.
Been working on your album? Yeah, a new album? Been in the studio?
Working on my new album. Yeah, cutting some tracks.
Any good stories from when you were doing it? Did you get faxed some lyrics or anything?
I came up with a couple of rhymes that are kind of mind-bending.
And is there anything that they do on, like, Rock Family Trees or any of those things where someone accidentally presses something and they've gone, wait, that could be... So I was just tinkering around on a piano and I came up with this. And it'll be like a big bit from a song or something.
Well, I'll tell you what, actually, something similar did happen this week.
What's that?
Where I'd written a harmony part that's a little bit sort of like Polyphonic Spree meets the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Vocal harmony.
Yeah. And didn't have anywhere to put it. And I was writing another song. And it's kind of, and I've been writing this song in my head for about 4 years. So we were working on structures this week so that I can just come in. I'm going to write lyrics over the weekend and then come in and just like, I mean, it's difficult. Some songs come to you all in one go. So you get like the lyrics and the tune And you kind of just it just pours out of you. For instance, when I wrote the song "He Makes You Look Fat," when was that? Like, I think that was probably
2008-ish, was it? 2009?
Maybe 2009. I wrote that in one go. Like I had that as a. It was meant to be like, but baby, it's cold outside. He makes you look fat, but maybe it's all that sort of thing, right? And but I was not very skilled on the guitar, and I sort of like knew my go-to chords were like E, A, G, or I think it was, I think what's that? I think it's E, A, G, yeah. And so I literally was stood in front of a music stand with a guitar. And then I just wrote it, and it took me about 5 minutes to write it. And
you wrote it in real time.
Yeah, and then for like many, many years, that was the one everyone was just like, oh, play that one. And then some songs take months, and some songs take years. And some songs, especially when working in a studio, I'll go in with an idea for a song, and I'll have like all of the tune and the instrumentation, and I'll know what I want it to sound like, but I won't have many lyrics written. And so then you'll write this thing, and there's this song literally that I start. It's a song called Crash and Burn, which might not. Well, it's at the moment it's scheduled to be on the album, but I started it in 2013 or 2012, and it was for my Evel Knievel show. And so everything, all the songs in that show were all written around a theme. So Crash and Burn was written for that.
Makes sense.
So we've got all this. We've got this amazing backing track for it, which is incredible. And
do you have lyrics first or music first or both?
Well, this is exactly what I'm telling you. Some of it all comes together in one go, where I literally started playing the chords, and then when I wrote "He Makes It Fat," I was just like, "I've seen your new boyfriend. He's really good looking. If he was a rent boy, I'd probably book him." And I literally, that all just came in one go, and then it's just like, that was like the easiest thing I've ever written. But this thing, "Crash and Burn," was for 2013 for my Evel Knievel show, and I wrote all the music, and it all came together. But I didn't write any lyrics. Or what I found this week is that I've written too many lyrics. I've written like 4 songs worth of lyrics, but they're all dick jokes, and
it's too many.
I just think that the song is better than that. So now it's this thing where it's kind of like. So what I told you the other day that I'm writing this album, but I didn't. But my main concern was the fact that it's not necessarily a comedy album. Some of the songs aren't very, not by design, aren't funny. They're just songs. So it's kind of like.
Do you feel a pressure that it should be funny? What do you think are people expecting? What are the expectations of Nick Helms?
I don't think anyone's expecting anything, to be honest. I think what I'm doing is I'm writing this album for me. So it's sort of like a concept album about. Some difficult stuff I went through, I've been writing it on and off since about 2016, and now it's literally I was working on other stuff in the studio, and then it's literally just like, can I just get this album done now?
Is this the one you were working on before Edinburgh even? Were you working on it for ages and ages?
Yeah, I've been working on it on and off for about 4 years.
Jesus.
So you're in the studio and you're going, fucking hell, is this what Brian Wilson went through? Anyway, so I've written this.
Have you brought a sandpit in to sit in?
You can totally see that. We're in this sort of bunker in Deptford, and me and my producer, Andy Jones, and it's just the two of us in this room. It takes me an hour to get there, an hour to get home. I sit in the studio for 8 hours, and I kind of write and record bits and pieces, and then, you know, and then sometimes your voice isn't in a very good place, so you just sort of like do demos and stuff. Anyway, so I wrote this harmony part, which is sort of like this, doesn't relate to anything particularly. And I'd written this other song, which I've had sort of like going around since about 2016. And I'm writing lyrics for that. And that's actually, I think when I actually sit down to write that, that won't be that difficult because it's got a very clear concept where you just sort of like follow the thread through it and you go, right, okay, that's what that is. But it feels a little bit like, in my head, I was just kind of like, sometimes you, I don't know if you find this when you write stuff, sometimes you have an idea for something, but you're sort of a little bit scared about sitting down and actually committing to it because you think it might not be as good.
Exactly.
And the thing about writing stuff is that you should actually just sit down and technically what you should do is just sit down and write it.
Regardless of what, however it turns out.
Because no one's going to see it until you present it.
No.
And then it gets it down. And when it's down on paper, then you can actually fiddle around with it and sort of change it and make it better or scrap it or never let anyone. But when it's down, then it's down. But I basically have ideas floating around my head over and over and over again. And I stand in my own way of sort of like getting it down on paper because I'm just scared that it's not as good. It's not ready yet, or it's not.
Yeah, I think you can rush stuff. I saw a thing the other day. I had one of those things on Facebook where it tells you, here's a tweet or a Facebook post you did 4 years ago. And I basically made a joke. And I saw it and went, that's really poorly worded. And I knew exactly how to say it funnier. Now, so you go, you wouldn't approach from that point of view, you'd approach it from like a naive person looking at that thing and say, what's all this? And have all the joke elements of it. So it's almost like I immediately knew how that joke would be funnier if I wrote it now.
And you'd already tweeted it, you say?
Like 4 years ago, I'd done a joke.
Just tweet it again.
Yeah, you just do the new version. You go, I'll just do the better version. And you do, you go, it's funnier.
Yeah, that's like us talking about John Carpenter. Every week we try and nail exactly what it is that we want to say about him.
Hey, we'll get there.
We'll get there one day.
We'll get there.
But so I had this harmony part and then I had this other song. I was just thinking this song sort of needs something to elevate it. And it turned out that this harmony part that I'd written is the same chord structure as this song that I'd written. And then we put them together and then you go, that's fixed both things.
Mm.
That's given this harmony part a home, but also it's elevated this other track. Mm. And it's kind of like a question and answer.
Yeah.
So they kind of like two halves of the same problem. And
I think most things like that you can kind of cook as well. Like you've got the problem and you can just let your brain do it in the background sometimes.
That's how I work. Yeah. I normally have an idea for something and then I will just sort of like, it will just be simmering.
Just park
along.
It. And it's just like, work on that while I'm doing the washing up.
Well, I watched the TED talk about genius, and that genius isn't the fact that you're a genius. Genius is that you are visited by a genius. Or visited by genius.
Mm.
And a genius is sort of like an imp or a goblin. Or something that sits on your shoulder and gives you the powers temporarily to do something. And there was this Tom Waits thing where he was driving and he had an idea for a song and he just turned around and he went, can't you see I'm driving? And then he just went home. And then he lost the song.
Maybe that's what was happening to William Shatner in that Twilight Zone. He was trying to tell him like a really good lyric or something for one of his albums.
For one of his albums.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
And he misunderstood what it was.
William Shatner's has been out. I've said this before. It's an amazing album.
Yeah. Well, maybe afterwards the gremlin came back and he went, oh, I've been trying to tell you this since the 60s, mate.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it was 30. It took 30 years to write that album by your...
Mm. It's taken you 4.
I mean, yeah, but also it's kind of like... What's interesting? Well, I don't know if it's interesting, but what's interesting? It feels time, doesn't it? What's interesting is that there's the 4 songs from this show, and then there's the 4 songs from my last show, and they all complement each other, but they're sort of like they were written for the shows, and then when you're doing an album, it's just kind of like that's great, but I've got lots of other ideas that I'm trying to fit in as well. So you kind of like, you don't want to just make it kind of like a tick list of all the stuff you... I haven't recorded all the songs that I've performed live even There's songs from all my shows that I have.
But they might not fit the album. But that's like musicals, isn't they? When you hear lots of songs that were written for musicals, it's often that, or you'll find out a song that's a well-known standard was written for a musical. And then when you see the musical, you go, oh, of course, that song is about that event that happens in that story. Except you can take that out of context and it still makes sense in the wider world. Its own song has its own kind of context, and like in Oliver or something. So at the time, all the songs from Oliver were then taken out and then re-recorded by current pop stars of the
sure.
day. Right?
And you grow up thinking this is just a song about someone that wants some more porridge.
Yeah.
But then you say, no, that's from Oliver. And you go, oh, that makes much more sense. Makes much more sense. but also there's sort of like, you get it where like Paul McCartney wrote a song for this film and they didn't use it.
Which song was that?
I can't fucking remember. It was something like, it's not Home Alone, but it was some sort of Christmas film where Paul McCartney wrote a song for it. And then they were just like, was it Trading Places?
Oh, Spies Like Us.
Spies Like Us. Paul McCartney. Yes. Oh, we read it from the Semyon book. Which, fucking hell. So he was a guest last year.
Mm.
Great guest.
Good guest.
Amazing book.
Nice man.
Wild and Crazy Guys. Great book. I actually was in the BFI this week and I saw that this guy was reading Wild and Crazy Guys and I wanted to go over to him and say, that's a great book. But I didn't have the nerve. And then he came over because he recognised me. And he said, are you Nick Helm? And I was like, oh, yeah. And he said, I just wanted to say hello. And I said, you're reading that book. It's a really good book, isn't it? And then I just bored him to the point that he wanted to leave. And he was like, yeah, that'll teach you to come over to me. And, it's a really good book. So he was a guest last year. I got a copy of the book. I read about half of it in about a week or a couple of days. Like I just zipped through it and then I lost it and then I didn't have it again for a very long time. And then when I got my phone nicked, I started reading it on public transport. I found it and then found it half a year later, started reading it on public transport, zipped through it. And then I finished it last week. So it's taken me about 7 months to read this book, which is a really easy read. It's a really good book if you're interested in 80s comedy and stuff like that. So Spies Like Us. Paul McCartney wrote a song for Spies Like Us.
He sort of volunteered it.
It because he was a big John Landis fan. Mm. And he said, oh, I really need a song. And John Landis was like, okay.
But I think he was also a bit like, not really. Like, he was that sort of like, he was a big Beatles fan. So on one hand, he was like, that's amazing. And on the other hand, he's a bit like,
But they had already edited the film,
yes,
and they couldn't
go
back and re-edit it.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, what am I meant to do with
the
song?
And the studio were like, yeah, well, you definitely have it in the Paul McCartney.
And he goes, well, I can't open with it because none of the shots were. And so he said, well, I'll just play a little bit of it at the end. But it was sort of like, yeah, the good news is Paul McCartney has agreed to write our title song. Bad news is it's not one of his best.
Look at that.
Bad news is it's not John.
Have you seen, do you remember Paul McCartney's song for Vanilla Sky?
No.
It's one of those songs. It's quite a sort of, considering it was, what's Vanilla Sky, 2002 or something?
Was it 2002, 2001? It was, I went to see it with my friend Chris.
In that it's one where Cameron Crowe does like the whole album and sort of has like new stuff from, I think he has like a couple of new like REM songs in it, and he commissions
2001. Oh my god, I'm cool. I'm on it. I'm fucking cool, man. Ask me what year was Vanilla Sky. 2002, 2001, mate, I think, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that is, yeah.
No, well,
I remember it from that Stanley Kubrick film. They're all watching it on the in-flight,
in-flight
entertainment.
I remember that now. But he does his song for Vanilla Sky, and it's a kind of Beatles-esque song. But it's like he's watched a film, not really understood it, and gone, it's like quite a like a It's mad, isn't it, that film? It's mad. I'll do, like, I wrote a mad song. And he just writes this thing where it's all about, like, there's a vanilla sky. It's made of custard. It's all like that. It's all like, what? So it's doing that sort of fairy sort of, hey, I get it. Like, way out, yeah. Like a way out. Yeah, I know. We do that. We do that. Hey, you know what? Hey, I used to take LSD. Hey, I know what you're talking about. And it's got custard and a couple of strawberries in the vanilla sky. And it's all like that. And you go, what is this, Paul?
And there's
it's
a great. Man sticking stuff on my butt. Oh, it's weird. It's the vanilla sky.
I tried to get it. I was going to have it this week. I couldn't find it. Couldn't find it.
What, vanilla sky?
Paul McCartney's vanilla sky. Can we see if we can find that at all?
You tried to get it this week?
I was going to look at it, but I couldn't find it on Spotify.
And
or
yet you've somehow magically managed to shoehorn it into the conversation. Yeah, yeah. You've been thinking about it all week.
That's it. Sometimes it's just cooking at the back. The goblin was talking to me about vanilla sky when I was trying to get sleep. Vanilla sky, I was thinking about it because it was on. It was
is
on,
vanilla sky good?
Well, that's it. I saw the film it was based on was a film called Abres los Ojos. It was a Spanish film, right?
Yes, yeah.
And I saw that at the cinema and I absolutely loved it. And then when I found out they were doing Vanilla Sky, I was so looking forward to it. And I think it works really well. It's basically shot for shot. Cameron Crowe's done nothing.
Really?
Yeah, it's basically exactly.
I think no, it's not shot for shot. I've seen it. What is it? What's it called?
Abres los Ojos. I think you got away with that.
I've got corona. Which means what?
Open your eyes, which is what they say
I've seen
in the film.
I've seen Open Your Eyes. It's got Penelope Cruz in it, hasn't it?
But and
she's in both of them. Keep talking.
She's talking, you're playing that.
No, not very well.
Oh, no. So Vanilla Sky.
On my handkerchief.
Can you see?
I can see the birds and the bees in the vanilla sky. No, that's great. I think I'll play bass and drums. Listen, the interesting thing about that track is I actually locked the door from the inside of the studio and I play all the instruments on that one.
Yeah, but the bad thing was I did it one after the other and they forgot to put them all together. So it's like just goes on really long and then it's just like a big drum bit and then a bit of a bass. It didn't really work. I ended up not putting it on the album.
But anyway, we fired Ringo. right.
Vanilla Sky. Oh, yeah, no, I was saying Abres los Ojos. It was just, it's very similar. Very similar film. It didn't change much.
No, it is similar, but it's sort of, I think what Cameron Crowe was going for was he was like saying it's like a cover
That's
version.
That's what he was saying when he goes, yeah, it's a cover version of, it's not a remake, it's a cover version.
And like this, like, because the original film doesn't have kind of recreations of Bob Dylan album covers in it, does
it?
No,
it doesn't.
So.
No, it doesn't.
So, I mean, it's not a shot-for-shot remake, is it? But it's a similar story. I mean, it's a similar film. But I think that they're... what I like... When I really like remakes, I like them as sort of like companion pieces.
And that's what... I think that worked. And I remember really loving Vanilla Sky when I saw it. Because I was going, wow, that really is like that film I loved. But then I wonder how well that film holds up in any regard today.
I mean, I watched it once at the cinema. It's weird. It's got Kurt Russell in it.
Kurt Russell in it, isn't it?
And I remember at the time seeing Kurt Russell on screen in sort of like amongst all these A-listers. I don't know if it's sort of like an insult, but I think of him very much as sort of like a B-movie actor.
Mm. It's like they tried, like there was a time, wasn't there? That kind of Stargate
era. In the best possible way. I mean, Kurt Russell is probably one of my favourite actors of all time.
Oh, for sure. But the films he made in the 80s that people remember him for were almost universally flops. Or like small movies that never really made.
All the way through. So I'm sure we've said before, but like by the time he did Tango and Cash, it was kind of like Sylvester Stallone stars in Tango and Cash with Kurt Russell. Yeah. It wasn't like when I was a kid, it was just like those two guys are huge stars.
Yeah.
And then when you're older, you realise that Sylvester Stallone was the big star, yeah. and Kurt Russell was this guy that people you may remember him from the Barefoot Executive, yeah. you know. But like he'd been around. He was a child star. Mm. I mean, he's had a fucking weird career.
Yeah, from like the sort of mid '60s, isn't he? He's like a child star and been on TV shows and things. And he's in Elvis at the World's Fair. And then played
he
Elvis.
He did a film with Elvis, mm. and then he played Elvis. I mean, and he's a bit of a weird choice, but because he doesn't really look like Elvis.
No,
but he's great in that John Carpenter Elvis yeah. film, which is a TV movie. Mm. Weird that you were talking about Open Your Eyes. I got you that.
Oh wow!
When I say I got you that, what I actually mean is I bought it twice on two separate trips to FOP.
It's Eyes Without a Face. I saw this. For the first time, about 6 months ago.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah, it's wicked. It's absolutely brilliant.
Mm. I bought it, and then it was on my things to watch thing. Forgot that I bought it, and then I went and bought it again. So, there you go, mate.
Thank you very much.
I've got well, I'm early pleased. Stages of dementia, and you're reaping the benefits. Eyes Without a Face. Yeah, okay.
So, it's great.
All right, I'll watch it this week, and then we can talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Right, that's what we'll do. We're going to have like a new format for the show. Where
yeah, we were talking about this, weren't we?
Well, I was like basically saying that you like Bad Boys so much, and I've recently rediscovered how much I like Martin Lawrence. So we should have had like
should have sunk up more
a Martin Lawrence fest, and then we should have talked about Black Knight
for an hour.
It's weird. I managed to list about four Martin Lawrence films that are, you know. So there's National Security. Black Knight, Nothing to Lose.
Nothing to Lose are quite light.
Oh, God, that was fucking awful. Was There's it? That bit when Tim Robbins sets his feet on fire or something.
That's right, yeah.
And he tries to put them out to Scatman. Like, Scatman
That's
was
what
this,
I mean, yeah.
Scatman was this new song that no one had heard before, and they were like, fucking hell, this is a real good one. And so they do sort of like this comedy sequence where Tim Robbins is putting the fire out on his legs to Scatman. And you just go, no.
Well, in that
this
way.
This is a terrible... This is dated it before it's even been entered the cinema, you know.
In the mid-90s, there was a real concerted effort by the studios to make Martin Lawrence a huge star. He was in lots of things. And in that way...
he was a huge star.
Yeah, but like it was almost like... It was like he was in so... But none of them really hit home, did they?
Well, I watched a thing about Martin Lawrence. Martin Lawrence was a huge star. He used to do Def Comedy Jam.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was on Saturday Night Live. And he has been banned for life from Saturday Night Live.
What did he do?
So he went on Saturday Night Live and he did his opening monologue. And his opening monologue was all about how a lot of women... this is early 90s. About how a lot of women, their personal hygiene isn't at its best, and they don't wash their assholes enough. He says, "I like kissing women all over. I like kissing women all over, but a lot of women, it doesn't sound like they know how to wipe their ass, and what they have to do is they have to douche themselves." And he did like a 5-minute monologue on it, and everyone was in the fucking studio going,
"Open mouth.
We didn't approve this." And he just does this 5-minute routine about it. He just opens the show like saying a lot of women's assholes aren't clean. And then they said, "Well, you're better." I don't know how they would have banned him. Would they have banned him like after the monologue or at the end of the show?
And then it's, at the end of the monologue, goes, "Yeah. Anyway, coming up later, we got Stone Temple Pilots. See you after the break."
but that's like what it would have been. And then, like, it was like, do you know what I mean? Did he just, because it's an hour and a half, so would he have done all of the sketches and would have everyone have been a bit like avoiding eye contact with him? Or would they have told him straight away, "You're in trouble, mate, you'd have to
tell him after the show, because otherwise it'd just put people off, wouldn't it?
But there'd be a vibe.
Yeah.
Going, what did you do that? And anyway, so recently Eddie Murphy did
Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live, and Chris Rock was on, I can't remember
Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Eddie Murphy, and what's his name off of 30 Rock?
Tracy Morgan.
And everyone was like, "Well, you know who's missing? Martin Lawrence." But I wasn't thinking that. But now, in hindsight, you go,
in the post-Bad Boys for Life era.
But he was in post-Bad Boys. But he hasn't made a film since 2011. But no. You watch it and you go, oh, yeah, well, I suppose that... but he was banned for life. And then they said, how'd you feel in the press for Bad Boys for Life? How'd you feel about being banned for life from Saturday Night? And he couldn't give less of a shit.
Yeah, I think that's the impression I get. I don't think he can. I think he's like, I think people are quite happy if they've just, or some people are, if you've just got, if you can get rid of like a lot of the ego and sort of realise that you were paid however many million to do a film like 4 or 5 years ago, you're like, brilliant. I'm fine, thanks.
And never have to work again.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Have you ever watched Will Smith's YouTube channel?
No, I didn't know he had one.
Yeah, he's got a YouTube channel.
He's a
YouTuber. he just walks around meeting people. This week there was one where he was on like Conan O'Brien, Jimmy Fallon. He did all the late night talk shows and promoting Bad Boys for Life. And Larry David was on, and him and Larry David talk about golf in a green room. And then he goes and meets this guy in New York who plays street golf. He found basically it was this homeless guy. Actually, he's not homeless. I don't know why I've added that to it. But it's this old guy that basically found a golf club in a bin. He picked it up, and I think because he was going through bins. Yeah. My brain has made a connection there that doesn't exist because you actually see his home in the YouTube thing. And he finds his golf club in a bin, picks it up, and then he finds these milk cartons. And he has taught himself how to play golf in the street.
But what's he doing? He's just trying to get into drains and things. What's he trying to do with it?
Yeah, he knocks it into a bucket, and Will Smith found out about him, because Will Smith plays golf. And then he went to New York and he met this guy, and they did the thing. It's obviously the PR thing where they've gone, this is what you can do for your YouTube thing this week. But, do you know what I mean? It's kind of like I don't know when he has any downtime. He's literally filming himself the whole time, meeting people, being nice to people. Like, he's good at golf. So it's not like he's, like, being...
But I suppose, like, I mean...
He's not being modest about it.
I mean, how many films do you do a year now? Maybe he probably still has 2 or 3 movies out, doesn't he?
He did 3 or 4 this year.
Yeah, he did.
He did Aladdin. He did
Gemini Man.
Bad Boys for Life has just come out. Like, he's always working.
Yeah, you're right.
But he's not having hits anymore.
No. No. Oh. Yeah. Oh, well.
Aladdin was fucking awful.
I didn't see it.
Fuck me. It was fucking terrible. Fucking hell.
Anyway.
Fucking hell. Oh, my God.
Kurt Russell.
Aladdin.
Kurt Russell was in...
Fuck. Fuck. I mean, imagine if that was how you reviewed stuff. Fucking hell. What were they fucking thinking? I mean, it's from one extreme to the fucking other, isn't it? You've got The Lion King, which is a shot-for-shot remake, which is fucking, fucking atrocious. And then you got fucking Aladdin, which veers so far off the actual fucking source material. But fucking hell, the changes they've made make no sense. It's fucking awful. Fucking hell. I went to see it with my girlfriend at the time, mm-hmm. And she's a Will Smith fan. And we came out, and she just said, "Poor Will Smith." Because he was even in it. Do you know what I mean? I mean,
is he good in it?
Not really. Because... So, Robin Williams did so much improv... I'm not a massive Robin Williams fan.
Sure.
I mean, when I say I'm not a massive, I mean, it's almost impossible to be able to... It's impossible to tell someone with a Robin Williams tattoo that you don't like him. Do you know what I mean? But I wasn't a fan. But, you know... I've said it now. I found his films overly sentimental. I think he's great in Aladdin. But what happened with Aladdin was they wrote the script and then he did 16 hours of improvisation. Imagine that. Fucking hell. It's an 80-minute film. went above and beyond. He's not even in it all the way through. Fucking hell. So so they pieced together... Basically, he did so much improvisation on Aladdin that it wasn't eligible for a Best Screenplay Oscar.
Oh.
So they said, we'd like to nominate it, but basically... Robin, it's all. I don't know why he didn't get Best Actor Oscar for that. Yeah. Really,
they should just give him a credit, shouldn't they? He did just change the thing and gone. Actually, just give him a credit on the film.
Well, that's all it is, isn't it? Yeah. That's all screenwriting. Well, that's all writing is. Yeah. Making something up and then writing it down. Yeah. Only he didn't do that. He just made it up in the room and then they pieced it all together from all his best ideas. But when you've got a performance that is kind of like pieced together over 16 hours of improvisation, then that's that. When you've got a script. It just feels so incredibly stilted because it's live action. There's loads of money being spent on it. So Will Smith doesn't really... It's weird because he's sort of Will Smith, but then he's the best person for the job.
Yeah, and they can't win, can they? It's a film they probably shouldn't have made because it's an impossible task. And the only way they could have done it was they would have had to have done it when Robin Williams was still alive and gone. You'll just play that part in the same... You'll do it again.
No. Because it wouldn't have worked with Robin Williams.
Why not?
Because it wouldn't have been the same. It
would have been Robin Williams 20 years later.
No, it would have been... Aladdin is pieced together from 16 hours of improvisation.
You could probably do that now.
No, but it would be different, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be the same jokes, so... it would be live action, so it would be improvising in front of it, which... who wants to see that, right? Watching a man... pulling ideas out of his ass, you know, and so if it was a live action Aladdin with Robin Williams, it just wouldn't work because film costs more money than tape. Mm. So he's sort of like he'd be improvising in front of a camera that it'd be hundreds of extras in costume.
Well, I suppose if Robin Williams was alive and they'd cast Will Smith, everyone would have gone mental. So would have just been, why don't you just get Robin Williams to do it?
It's a crazy... Don't make it.
Yeah.
Just don't make it.
It's too hard.
I mean, it made $1 billion, but like... it's a fucking... my point is that if Robin Williams was alive, it wouldn't have worked because basically he wouldn't be necessarily doing the script from the animated version. So people would be there going, oh, it's different. Mm. And also it's kind of weird... unless it was the same standard as that. I mean, you can't... So if Robin Williams was alive and they were making an Aladdin remake, you'd go, well, what's the fucking... It wouldn't work with him in it.
And also it suggests that given they've recorded 16 hours, there was a good 15 hours that were like, no.
I mean, imagine. I don't think all of it was probably appropriate for children.
True.
And then so you go, well, who is just it? So you get Will Smith because he's like a personality.
Yeah,
he's like so different from Robin Williams, but he is also kind of like equally beloved. Mm. And you go, yeah, well, no one can hate the fact that Will Smith is in this. Mm. Because everyone likes Will Smith. Mm. And then, but it is fucking hell. It's fucking. So it's stilted. So you've got him sort of like being sassy, and you kind of go, yeah. But it's really stilted, and it's kind of, it's just not a good. It's not a good. It's not his fault, actually, but he's not even the best thing in it. So it's kind of weird. It's rubbish.
It's Guy Ritchie films, aren't
they? Guy Ritchie. It's fucking mental. Everything about that film is fucking mental. There's a bit with it because anthropomorphized. Mm. We must have talked about this before. There's Iago, the parrot.
Oh yes, yeah.
Is not anthropomorphized. It's a CGI parrot which acts like a parrot. It's just a parrot. So in in the animated film, they're kind of like conspirators together, right?
Yeah, they're both co-bad guys.
Yeah.
He's like his henchman.
They're a double... He's got a parrot henchman who's in on it all.
Yeah.
And so at the end, when he gets sucked into the lamp, Iago's flying away and he goes...
you're coming too.
You're coming with me! And he grabs him as he's getting sucked into the lamp and Iago's like trying to get away and he gets sucked into the lamp. And in the live-action one, it's just...
Animal cruelty.
In the live-action one, Yeah, Jafar is getting sucked into the lamp, and he just
grabs a parrot.
There's a parrot with no personality for the entire film, and as he's getting sucked into the lamp, he goes, "You're coming with me." And you go, "Why? Why are you grabbing? Why are you grabbing a parrot? Why are you grabbing a parrot? What are you going to do with the parrot? Why don't you grab another human being that's there, and then you can maybe like chat to them? You know, it's like." You know, this is like, grab a book. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, grab anything. Why the fuck are you grabbing a parrot? It's just it's not a random parrot. It's your parrot. But, like, how much do you love this parrot? What are you going to do? You're going to fuck a parrot for eternity? What, in a lamp? I mean, what are you doing? I mean, I don't know why I went straight there, but you do get lonely. So what are you going to do? You're going to fuck your pet parrot for eternity in a fucking magic lamp? What are you? You're coming with. It's like there's no setup for this whatsoever. But you've taken the bit from the animated film, but you haven't taken the character from the animated film. So it's just this weird thing where you go, "Oh, he's a very vindictive genie, isn't he?" I mean, his last ditch effort to do something evil is to take it out on this innocent parrot that's just flying around. It's fucking mental. Anyway,
also, parrots are one of the few animals that you could anthropomorphize and have them, or not have them anthropomorphize and have them legitimately say things. Because you go, that could make sense in the context of
a
film.
I mean, he does squawk and he does say stuff, but he's a bird.
Yeah,
it's not like, there's no sort of...
He hasn't got
there's
like
no, a... There's no personality to it. Mm. It's literally, you've done a CGI bird that is acting like a bird, that's just a bird. He's not a sidekick. He's not a henchman. He's nothing. It's just a bird that's sort of like there. It's almost sort of like lip service. It's just sort of like, hey, remember the parrot from the thing? Well, this is live action, so you can't really get away with a talking parrot. So we've got a parrot here. Then it's kind of like, you remember the parrot from the cartoon? This is sort of like a nod to that. You're coming with me! Why? Why? It's just a fucking parrot. Fucking weird. Anyway, probably play a song. But we haven't finished with Kurt Russell, have we?
No, how do we get onto Kurt Russell? Oh, Kurt Russell's career. Oh, no, we talk about him as he never really had like a huge... he was never really a big star until things like Stargate is what kind of made him into like a... That's when he was getting $10 million and things,
wasn't
it?
I knew who Kurt Russell was before Stargate.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, like, he was big as like a video star. But when he actually started earning money, like big bucks, Hollywood big bucks, was after, to me, it felt like, it was almost, felt like the end of his career. Whereas I think to the mainstream, that was almost like his entry point. So he was getting like $10 million, wasn't he, for like... What was Breakdown and all that kind of stuff, wasn't it?
He didn't get paid $10 million for Breakdown. Breakdown must have cost $10 million.
It was but like that's when he was like that's when he was getting big money.
Who directed Breakdown?
It was a fellow that did Jonathan Mostow.
Was it? Yeah,
wasn't that
U571?
Yeah, I think it was him.
I mean, he's
Terminator 3.
He's had a varied career, isn't he? Breakdown was great.
Great film.
Terminator 3 was awful. Bon Jovi gets shot in the head at the beginning of U571, so it's not all bad. Breakdown was great. Kathleen Quinlan. Kathleen Quinlan. Mrs. Lovell. The wonderful Mrs. Lovell.
From Apollo 13.
From Apollo 13.
I like Kathleen Quinlan. She's not...
Kathleen Quinlan. What I like about Stargate... at the beginning of Stargate, Kurt Russell's very depressed, isn't he?
Yeah, because he's got long hair, and his
son has shot himself.
Yeah.
So he's very depressed. He's got beautiful, long, flowing curtains.
Mm. Yes.
That have been finely shampooed and very silky.
Yes.
He doesn't look like... He looks like he stepped out of a Nirvana music video. He's meant to look like he's given up on life.
Yeah.
But he actually looks like...
He's kept up with the times.
He's actually, very, very contemporary. But it's meant to show how depressed he's been. That he's grown his hair all out. He's in bloody hell. He must have been depressed for quite a while. Because those curtains are long. And then, he signs up for the army. Mm. Buzz cut.
Yeah, straight away.
And you think, well, this guy means business.
He's back.
He is back. Here he is. It's terrible. He's got two terrible haircuts in one film. Soldier, that was probably when they realised he wasn't as bankable as they all thought he was. But then that is a bad film. Sequel to?
Blade Runner.
Yes.
Isn't it? What a weird
thing. It's set in the same universe. And there's a spinner. The cars that they drive in Blade Runner are called spinners. And there's a spinner on the junk planet that the soldier's on.
What a weird thing. You'd think they'd try and make more of that.
Well, it's just that it's so tonally different. Is it Paul W.S. Anderson?
I think it is, isn't it? Yeah. What a weird thing to have done.
On the back.
And they've also, like, now they've done that Blade Runner sequels. It was almost like, it's like sort of vaguely a selling point at the time. But now it's almost like, that never happened.
Nobody mentioned Soldier. On the back of Alien versus Predator, there's a pool quote, and it says, one of the best action movies of all time. And the quote goes to Paul W.S. Anderson, the director of the movie. It's like, you can't do that.
Right, so the tagline for Alien versus Predator is, whoever wins, we lose. I really like that. Whoever wins, we lose. It's like, it don't matter.
The tagline to the sequel, Requiem, was, on Earth, everyone can hear you scream.
That's quite good.
I don't think so.
I think that's quite good.
I don't think so.
That's pretty good.
Have you seen Alien vs. Yeah. Predator Requiem?
Yeah, I have.
I've never got all the way through it.
I've probably
attempted to. Well, I saw that once at the cinema. It was absolute bullshit. It was just like, oh, please don't. If this is getting in the way of Scorny Weaver making a fifth one, then don't. Second one, I've probably tried to watch four or five times and I've never got past it.
In terms of your Alien movies. Yeah, Aliens versus Predator now, they're like mid-tables. They're both mid-tables now. They're like, they're perfectly fine. Like, Aliens versus Predator is better than Alien 4. You know, it's that kind of, and certainly better than your Prometheuses and all that. I'd rather have that than when it's taken far too seriously.
Well, I think that it does get a lot of mileage out of the fact that it's got Lance Henriksen in it.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't make much, did he?
No. He did Millennium, didn't he, that TV show?
That was good. That was sort of an X-Files spin-off.
Yeah, post-X-Files.
Set in the same world.
Yes, it was, yeah.
The Lone Rangers, what were they called?
I can't remember.
There were the guys from the X-Files, and they turned up in
I know.
The three guys.
Lone Gunman?
The Lone Gunman, that's it. The Lone Rangers are from the movie Airheads.
And the Lone Ranger.
But the Lone Rangers...
Yeah.
So the whole thing is, you've got Brendan Fraser, Steve Buscemi, and Adam Sandler, and they're a rock band called the Lone Rangers, and everyone keeps going, but there's three of you, Joe Mantegna, but there's three of you. How can you be lone if there's three of you? And they're all like, what are you talking about? We don't get it.
Airheads was the first time I ever saw Steve Buscemi in a film, and it's weird because I always forget he's in it. But everything he did subsequently, I was like, that's a bloke from Airheads.
Well, he aged like 50 years after he made Airheads. He made Airheads and Living in Oblivion in the same year, where he had the same long haircut.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I thought, oh, that's that guy. But like Living in Oblivion and Airheads are so totally different films.
Play a song.
Not that one.
They got their own block and they got their own bike.
Nick Helm och Nathaniel Metcalfs fanclub på Fubar Radio.
Sam Raimi directing Doctor Strange 2.
I've heard rumours.
Fucking hell!
But also, it's weird because he's just stepped into it, hasn't he? It's like the other guy's dropped out. So it's not even like... Yeah. When they were talking about replacements, everyone was like, don't get your hopes up, guys. They're not going to get anyone big. It's going to be like a TV guy or something.
He's like the first big guy that they've got.
Mm.
He's like legitimate.
No, that's. But I mean like when because the other guy's only just dropped out like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but
or something,
Kevin Feige is basically...
He must have thrown some money at him, hasn't he?
Kevin Feige is basically telling everyone to go fuck themselves. So everyone was like all super hyped about Doctor Strange being a horror film, and then this director left over creative differences, and everyone was like, "Well, it's not going to be a horror film, is it?" So he's only gone and fucking hired not only the inventor of modern superhero movies and Marvel movies, Sam Raimi, who did the Spider-Man. What do you call it if there's only two films?
He did three.
He did those two Spider-Man movies,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Yeah, yeah.
But, like, he also invented 80s horror. Mm. I mean, like, so they've gone, oh, he's not going to be... Not only is it an established huge guy that's already fucking proven himself within the Marvel universe, not the cinematic universe, but he basically invented what a Marvel film would
be. Yeah, everyone else has basically copied that, really. And
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say Doctor Strange and Spider-Man are both Stanley Steve Ditko creations. Right. So they're both the same artist and writer. So it's a good kind of good combination.
So Bruce Campbell...
Yeah.
Yes, come on. You know Bruce Campbell was going to end up being Mysterio in Spider-Man 4?
No. Oh, in the Raimi ones. In the Raimi ones. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So basically, he had like a cameo in all the films, and I think that Spider-Man 4 was going to tie all of his cameos together, where it would have been...
Oh, so he has been just pretending to be lots of different people.
Yeah. I think that that's what they were going to go for. But basically, Mysterio wasn't going to be a main character. Mm. Mysterio was going to be this... joke character at the beginning that basically was in court, I think.
Well, I think as well that
he was getting like a life sentence in court in sort of like...
The third movie got really kind of done over on, didn't he? Because it was going to be... Who's the guy who ends up playing Venom? What was he called?
Topher Grace.
Because Topher Grace, I think, was going to be playing the chameleon. He was going to be playing a completely different character.
Ooh.
And they basically went, nah, it's got to have Venom in it. And Sam Raimi's like, well, he's not like a classic villain. He's like a modern era villain. And they were like, nah, it's got to be Venom. But it's fine. We've already cast the chameleon. We'll just make him play Venom. And he go, not even remotely like good cast. Do you know what I mean? It's like you've got a completely different body shape and things.
Yeah, but I always thought that was deliberate because Topher Grace is kind of like the same as...
Peter Parker.
What's his face? Tobey Maguire,
yeah.
So they're sort of like, it's basically
yeah,
the
mirror
same.
Yeah,
mirror images of each other. And so if Venom is kind of like an evil Spider-Man, you know, it's kind of like what the outfit is, isn't it? So you kind of like, I would completely buy why they'd have hired him to be that, because he looks... He doesn't look exactly like him, but it's the same body shape and all of that. But then you also go, this is a huge budget movie, and you've got the guy from That 70s Show in it.
Mm.
Kind of aim higher.
And also, because that was another series that tried to have quite, not necessarily big name villains, but quite well respected actory people, didn't it, as the villains?
We went from Willem Dafoe to Alfred Molina. To Topher Grace.
Yeah, but also you had thinking
Thomas Hayden Church.
Thomas Hayden Church, who at the time was kind of a big... Well, he'd was he Oscar nominated
he'd done
at the time or something?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's weird. I mean, I love Sam Raimi. Army of Darkness, I would probably... It depends what day it is, but it's always in the top two. But I just feel like it's a bit undignified for a 39-year-old man to say his favourite film is Army of Darkness. It should be something a little bit more... but it is. It's Army of Darkness is my favourite film. I love it so much. It's such a funny film. It's just, yeah, it's one of... It's a comedy, but it's not like... You wouldn't sit down and go, right, we're going to write a comedy now. And it's this sword and sandals, Ray Harryhausen kind of like...
Yeah.
Nobody would sit down and write that. Nobody would even sit down and write that as a third Evil Dead film. It's such a fucking weird film in the context of all of that. But it just so happens that it's one of the funniest films I think I've ever seen. And consistently funny, with an amazing central performance and amazing special effects that are sort of like, they're not amazing. You can kind of see how they do them, but it's kind of like just the fact that you can see that it's, you can almost see the working out on, and it's just like, oh wow, they've reversed the film in this shot. Yeah. And they've kind of, and I love it. I think it's brilliant. Just before CGI. Yeah, so it was like 93 or 94. So it's just before kind of like...
Yeah, before...
It took them fucking ages to film. You can see how long it took them to film because Bruce Campbell's hair is a different length in every single shot. and so it must have taken them like a couple of years to film. And it's, yeah, it's such an incredible film. Spider-Man films, I mean, I saw the first one, fine. Second one I really liked at the time. But it felt like a really different director. It felt like he was very much trying to sort of like... Obviously, he was doing a huge $100 million franchise and he was used to much smaller budgets. But, like, yeah, it just felt like it wasn't my Sam Raimi. And then...
I think he's a perfect choice for those Spider-Man films. I think they're...
Well, I mean, he's got to the right... I'm not saying they were bad films.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying that... people were like going, classic Sam Raimi. And you go, it's not classic Sam Raimi, is it? There's that scene with the chainsaws in Spider-Man 2 where they're going, yeah, classic Sam Raimi. You go, it is a little bit. But he is also sort of he's very restrained.
Yeah. Well, I think he's the first person who seems to approach them from like a sort of quite a fanish point of view. Like, he loves it, doesn't he?
But he likes it. Golden.
Yeah, very like Silver Agey kind of.
So there was Oz. Have you seen Oz the Great and Powerful?
Yes.
Which is basically, it's a remake of Army of Darkness. It's the exact same plot.
Yeah.
I fucking love Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
The UK cut that was on Film 4 recently. The UK cut is it's subtle, but there's differences. I think that the American cut is virtually unwatchable, the second half of it. And the director's cut, again, just absolutely, they've just literally found any old bits of scrappy footage and they've just whacked it in and you go, fine. But the UK cut is perfect, like perfect. And I watched it so many times, wore out so many VHSs that when you watch any other version, it's kind of like, oh, hang on, that's not right. So I'll stop watching it if it's not the right one. So we'll do... how did we get onto that? Sam Raimi's doing Doctor Strange 2.
Yes.
So, fingers crossed, Bruce Campbell cameo. And
Almost a given, I think.
It'll be better than the first one. I saw the first one on a plane. Not best circumstances, but fucking... Pooey! It's like, which is weird, because when... What was the last Avengers film called? Endgame.
Mm.
I thought Doctor Strange was quite good in that.
Yeah, but that might be it. It might be like, Hulk maybe, and stuff. It doesn't really work as its own film, but you can stick it.
I think that's a weird thing to say about Hulk, though, because I think that could work as a film. They just haven't done it right.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they have done it right in other films, but it's just like, I think when...
What, with Bill Bixby?
No, like in the when he's in been in like the first Avengers movie. It's like, that's the first time you go, yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah, but Universal own him as a solo character.
Do
they? So the reason why he's only a support character is because if they were to make him a solo character, then Universal would have to co-release it. But because he's a support character, Marvel own him, so they only use him in the background. So what they basically did was they did like an Incredible Hulk movie within however many movies they've made. So they kind of like, he's got like a beginning, a middle, and an end for his character over all of the films. That's how it works. But, I could not give less of a shit. we'll do some really quick fan mail, then we'll get our guests.
That's all that McCartney stuff.
McCartney was in Los Angeles. Okay, right, we'll skip through that. I've seen... Is this one?
I guess so.
I've been a recent viewer of the show Community. Can't decide if Joel McHale is annoying or not. What do you know about him, Jay Ham?
Don't know much about him.
Google a cunt. Hi, guys. Love the show. What are your thoughts on John Carpenter? I've always been curious to know. Just joking. I mean, We did mention him briefly when we were talking about Kurt Russell.
We did, yeah.
But we didn't mention The Thing once, and I think we deserve a big pat on the back.
Didn't talk about The Thing at all.
Just joking. I'd prefer to know what you think of The Carpenters, to be honest. Karen is the best drummer of all time. Martin. Sure.
Got a lot of time for...
Howdy. Last week, you talked about rumping in films.
We did.
I think Don't Look Now has got a strong pump scene.
It is good. One of the best
I once
ones.
Tried to recreate the pump scene from Crank at a race course, but it didn't go well. Lovely show. Lovely show. The
Lovely
Niv.
Show. The Niv.
That's nice. Crank, what a... I think that... Yeah, that's... Hey, NNN.
Boss show.
Boss show today. Sorry. I started listening to the show a few weeks ago and enjoy the show lots. The way you start the show is unique, but it works for me. I'd like your thoughts on lookalikes. People often tell me I look like Ian Beale when he lived in an allotment. Who do you think you look like, Chaz? Who do you think you look like?
Who do I think I look like?
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry. Akatradio.
Never thought about it.
Never thought about it. I thought we should read these first.
Well, you should have a more examined life, Nat, and then you could...
Who do you look like?
I used to look a bit like John Cusack.
Did you? Okay.
Across Point Blank. I had the same eyes. But those eyes have changed through years and years of substance abuse. By substance, I mainly mean alcohol. Hi, hi, hi. I like to listen to your show when I'm on the... What are you doing? Stop adding stuff. Hi, hi, hi. I like to listen to your show when I'm on the toilet or bath.
Okay.
When you're on the bath. I find it relaxing and strenuous at the same time. Are you shower or bath people? And do you bathe daily? Foxy Bongo.
I am. I like a bath. I'm a big bath fan.
I like a bath. My bath is not a very big bath, and I do often worry that I will slip under the surface of the water and drown.
That's from Foxy Bongo.
Nick, I thought I saw you in a phone box in Cockfosters the other day. Can you confirm, please? Elton. Not the Elton.
Could be. He could be a fan.
Ben Elton.
Yeah, the Elton.
Ben Elton John.
Yeah, the Elton.
No, I wasn't. I don't go to Cockfosters. Not after the... anyway. So, time to go get our guest. What do you want?
Shall we let's play Vanilla Sky? With
Here
Bruce
he
Warwick.
Is.
So this is Paul McCartney.
Thank you. sky. In the vanilla sky.
That's off my new album, Flaming Pie.
Nick Helm of the Honey Metcalf Fan Club.
He didn't.
Viva Radio.
He didn't rhyme Vanilla Sky with Flaming Pie. Mark, can you just talk into your microphone?
Yeah, I can have a go. This is me.
And talk again.
Hi,
yeah, I know. Yeah. I've worked it out. It's good. It's just, you always tell me it's the wrong fucking. We're joined in the studio now by comedian extraordinaire Mark Watson.
I've been listening to the show for a few minutes now. It's refreshing how much swearing there is.
Is there? I didn't even notice it.
No, I do.
If you do quite a bit of these sort of like popping up on radio, you do start to really want to say fucking a bit, and you're just not normally allowed to.
I just actually have to make an apology to our listeners. Last week, I forgot to say the word cunt.
Okay. How'd that happen?
I don't know.
How can you make a mistake
it just didn't come up. It was weird as well. It was just after we left the EU, and it didn't come up. Well, maybe I was just kind of like just keep it middle of the road. I was so delighted.
We all just want to slip away from wrecking our careers like this. It's so easy to just come away thinking, hang on, I didn't say cunt there, and over.
I think we get too much for an easy ride on this show, though. I think sometimes Natalie should point at us and say, don't talk about this thing.
But does that never happen?
Never.
You basically, there's no policing of this at all.
I know we've talked about Aladdin before.
Yeah, probably. We have, yeah.
And we've certainly talked about Kurt Russell.
But I worry more that when we're talking about someone, we go, I think someone could sue us for this.
But that's not happened either.
Well, like Sam Raimi. Well, Noel Edmonds got a bit shirty about it, and we got mentioned in The Sun, didn't we?
I think it was or something.
You don't have to do a lot to get Noel Edmonds.
Now I get riled up.
No.
He's got his feeders out.
He's got his Google alert switched on.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Which, if I was Noel Edmonds, I would not have, because it'd be very tiring how many things popped up.
I think it'd be upsetting as well.
Yeah.
I'd be a bit upset. I'd go, I'd quite like a normal
I think the average level of Edmonds chat would be something that Noel Edmonds himself wouldn't want to see, probably. But he obviously does, because I've heard quite a few stories of him being surprisingly alert.
Keeping his eye out.
It would be like if my episode of Live at the Apollo was on every night of the week. I just wouldn't be able to go on Twitter. It would be...
Yeah. Almost the more TV you do, the less you can actually go on social media. I think
it's weird. It's a trade, isn't it?
You know,
you trade in your freedom to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I can't go online anymore.
You either work or you interact with the public, but it's difficult to do both of them, unfortunately. Yeah. So you make a decision.
You don't have the platform, do you, if you don't do the telly work? But
you've got to be on telly.
It's a poison chalice,
but you've also
it?
Got to run for the hills quite quickly after you've been on.
I just know that if Dave is showing it, I'm just like, right, I'm not going to go on the internet tonight. I'll put my laptop in the bath and I'll leave it.
What happened with your life? How did you offend people?
I didn't offend people.
You just do what you normally do on stage.
You just do something like every time. I don't get it for 8 out of 10 cats. People tend to like that. But every time something that I filmed 4 years ago goes on TV, you just get someone saying, you're a fucking cunt. You are the worst comedian that I've ever seen. Oh yeah, I like Russell Kane and Roisin Connolly, but fucking who's this Nick Helm fucking cunt? And then you're just like, I'm adding the cunts, I'm actually self-hating.
That's the weird thing. My Love the Apollo was about 10 years ago now, and so if people, sometimes people will comment on it assuming that that every time it's on, you yourself sit down and watch it. And you're like, mate, I don't even know what programme you're referring to here. It's about a quarter of my life has passed since Love the Apollo.
Last week, an episode of 8 out of 10 Cats I was in was on. On the same night, right? 8 out of 10 Cats does Countdown, Roast Battle, and Live at the Apollo were all on the same night.
That is a lot of
And
hell,
it was
Matt.
A fucking minefield. It was just like, I didn't know who was saying what about which.
Yeah.
It was fucking like, do you hate me or do you love me? I don't know. Fucking hell, it was horrible. Just absolutely horrible. And then when I was on tour, Live at the Apollo was on, and I'd just come off stage and I'd had a really nice gig in Cardiff. People were saying, you're the worst comedian I've ever seen. I was just like, I think I got a standing ovation. What are you talking about?
That audience turned after I left the stage. That doesn't normally happen.
Fucking hell. Just say it to my face, guys.
It's funny when people write stuff like, if that happens, there's an unexpected pile-up of
and people go like, why is this prick on my telly so much? As if you've personally gone into the TV studios and said, I demand that you show all of these things simultaneously.
Do them all in one night. I think they were all on different channels, though, so it wouldn't be like, you wouldn't have just sat down and watched
them.
But
you could have programmed it if you wanted to program your viewing around it.
If you specifically wanted to be angered by Nick that night, you could find a way.
But, like, they didn't even tell me. Do you know what I mean? I'm the person that would want to watch it the most.
You rarely know when your own stuff is being repeated, especially with stuff like Dave, where they'll show something 25 times. But some people will always react if it is the first time, even if the joke is about something like Nick Clegg or Abraham Lincoln or something. It's a clue that it's not a new episode.
Or just the fact that you're now like forever having to make sort of apologies for one bad week you had 4 years ago.
Yeah, the internet is a bit like that.
It's there forever.
Very difficult to escape.
They just, but they think it's now.
They always think it's now. Yeah, even if the show was quite clearly shot in 2009, even if people are making jokes about MySpace and stuff like that,
even if it's black and white, what's all this stuff that you're doing?
Yeah,
what's all this stuff you're doing on my telly?
You, Mark, are something of a polymath. You do lots of different things.
I like that.
And when we came through to take your photo, you had your phone open, doing a text or doing some email. You had a laptop open.
Yeah.
So you're busy.
Got a pager.
What are all the things that you had on the go at once?
Well, so I'm touring. I've just launched
you're
a
just tour. About to go on tour.
I've literally announced it this morning, but that's not even... I'm not even here to promote that. It's a coincidence. Just just remembered this morning that I am.
Well, let's not
that. it's not.
Where's your
promotion?
Where's your first tour date?
Good question. Like, I don't even know. It doesn't start till May, June.
How many dates are you doing?
This is actually quite a small one. It's only about 25, 30.
I would say that's a tour.
Well, actually, it is, isn't it? So it's funny. Sometimes you get
a small one would be 10.
Authors and stuff will sometimes do a book tour and they make a big song and dance on Twitter, and then it literally is five shows, and you think that's
just
2 days of a comedian's life. But then at the same time, I'm doing all this amateur environmental stuff online because I felt like it was time to save the planet.
Well done.
So thanks. Well, it's just
better late than never, mate.
Exactly. Who, if not me? Greta's doing a cracking job, mind you.
Yeah.
But she needs a little bit of support. So I've just got a smart meter, and I'm doing all this like green energy and eat more. All this sort of like minor, quite lazy steps. So I'm trying to encourage people to do that at the same time. But that is not related to the tour. I'm just doing, as usual, too many unrelated things at once.
Why is that?
Well, I think it's because I did an environmental thing about 10 years ago about I was a little bit shit at it, all of it, and really I should do a bit more. And it's one of those things you do as a comedian that is a sort of well-meaning but slightly half-assed project. And I made a little bit of progress on my carbon footprint and all this sort of thing. And that was in 2008, and I remember thinking, this is all very well, but no one's going to start talking about this as a result of me doing it. And then fast forward 10 years, you start thinking, oh, this is a shame, actually, the world is burning a bit more.
It's literally burning.
And I can now see, I can sort of see it playing out that in 10 more years, people are like, ah, shit, we really should have done it then, actually. And because of the way humans are, we probably just will keep doing that. And the thing is, no one's going to, or at least as a result of me, no one's going to, like, stop flying. So I just, stuff like smart meters so you can monitor your energy and doing, like, eating more locally produced foods are quite small things I can maybe encourage other people to do. But I must emphasise, Greta's still going to convert far more people, I think. I think I see myself in a sort of assistant manager role.
Do you feel that, or do you feel like she's preaching to the converted?
Well, that's the only thing.
Because
some of her stuff is a bit serious as well.
She makes people very angry. And so as a result, I mean,
which might be a good thing in a way.
Assholes.
But you've got to, yeah, it's true.
I mean,
but
you
still need a sort of good cop to her bad cop, don't you?
But who's arguing against saving the planet?
Well, I think that is.
But do you know what I mean? What's the alternative argument?
Well, I suppose
we actually like oil.
Well, the trouble is it's not an argument, but it is a stance.
I think
it
is, and I think the thing
like an agenda, I suppose.
Like even if you took Greta Thunberg at the most kind of literal, and if you take all the power away from her as well, which she's got a huge amount of,
no pun
she's still someone. Thank you. She's still someone who is trying. She's a young person who is trying to do some good, right? And you cannot take that away from her. And I find the fury towards her is absolutely baffling. I find it like I cannot get my head around this. Because even if she was 6 or 7 and made like a pasta model that said use less energy,
which
you'd
I
go,
have,
oh, that's
I have
nice.
Done that. Right. By the way, it's stuck onto my smart meter.
The problem is, she's had to go on adult platforms to do it because there isn't Blue Peter anymore.
But is there not at all?
In the 90s, she would have been on Blue Peter, and it would have been, like, great. Or Newsround.
We don't have that option now. They probably still have Newsround, don't they?
I think they still have Newsround, to be fair.
Yeah, but you're right. That alone is not a big enough platform, really. If Blue Peter was a big enough platform to save the world from, we live in a very different planet now. Where people made basically everything out of toilet roll.
Holders.
Recycling.
Recycling, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, they were well ahead of the game, really, Blue Peter. Oh, they were constantly talking about
you know,
recycling.
You know what you should play with? You should make a Tracy Island out of toilet paper. That the toilet roll that was 1 foot away from your dad while he was having a shit. That's what you can play with. You just paint it, isn't it? Paint it all nice.
I think this is more of a memory, is it?
This is. Do you know what I mean? It's just like that's what we in the 90s, in the 80s and 90s, we used to just play with old bits of cardboard from the shitter.
Yeah, you'd mostly just get
We'd paint it, and
you'll be invited onto these shows about how good things were in the 80s any day now, mate.
So much better then, wasn't it?
So much better then. I just think it's weird, isn't it, that people are so... It's the same with vegans, though. It's kind of... they're right. They're just right.
Yeah. And if you don't want to do it, it's fine. But it's amazing how angry people get about other people.
I've got a routine about vegans in my show. So I was on tour, and it would get like such a strong not like intentionally, the way it was. I'd mention vegans, and people would get furious, and they'd shout out and be like, "Fuck it, vegan!" And you'd be like, "It's mental," because their argument on paper is absolutely,
yes, totally solid.
All they're really saying is stop killing animals, and also. stop promoting things which are bad for the environment. Like, it's very hard to come back at it. But then people's counter argument is that, but why aren't you eating sausage rolls, you fucking weirdo? Like, it's a little bit, it feels like a one sided argument in
some
way.
That's the thing with Greg's. Greg's introduced a vegan sausage roll. They didn't stop making the other one.
No, people acted as if. Immediately replaced all meat products in the world.
They force-fed my baby a vegan sausage roll. She can't even eat solids.
They've done a steak slice. A vegan steak slice, and it's not very nice. But what I would say is, if I was a meat eater, I still wouldn't eat a steak slice. Do you know what I mean?
It was never
on my list of things that I'd want to eat anyway. So I ate it because it was vegan. But then at the same time, I was like, I don't know what the comparison is. I don't know what it would have tasted like.
I don't enjoy this steak slice.
But I don't know if it's because it's vegan or because it's a steak slice.
I don't like the idea of a steak slice.
But the thing about like the Piers Morgan thing, when he went off on one about...
Vegan sausage rolls.
He's got the same PR company as Greg's.
Yeah.
So like he goes off on one about that, and then and he's getting it even to a wider audience where people are going, "Fuck Piers Morgan, I'm going to eat a vegan sausage roll to spite him." Mm. Or it's kind of like, "Hang on a minute, I've heard about this." It's like anti promotion, isn't it?
Next thing you know, you've got him on his show being forced in inverted commas to eat a vegan sausage roll, and you think this looks awfully like a well coordinated PR stunt, For someone that hates vegan sausage rolls so much, you spent a lot of the past 6 months talking about it. And as you say, then you start looking behind the mechanics, and it turns out everyone is basically with the same management company. And like,
there's a very good chance someone was watching GMTV who didn't know Greg's did a vegan sausage roll and went, "Well, I might have one of them." Well, he's like,
"Do you know what?" Exactly. Greg's used to be a national joke, wasn't it? It was just sort of like, "I have dinner at Greg's."
Until recently, I mean, stand-ups would do stuff about stand-ups in the north would do. Like insulting gag about how many Greggs there were. It was one of the hackiest topics. And now Greggs have managed to reinvent themselves as sort of like future world opinion shapers.
Yeah, but they made so much money that he gave 7 million. The manager, they had 7 million in profits, and he gave it all to the staff that worked there.
Oh, really?
So
they're a great company.
Nice.
Apparently.
Nice guy.
It's a bit like how Skoda used to be the butt of jokes when we were at school. And then if you take your eye off the ball for a while, I mean, I don't know much about cars, but it seems like people, like, if you ride out being schoolyard jokes for 20 years or so, eventually your brand becomes a sort of respectable. If you told me when I was 15 that not only would you not get bullied for having a Skoda, but people would deliberately buy them, I would have thought it was incredible.
Well, it's the classic underdog story, isn't it?
Really is, yeah. Mind you, that...
I also suggest that if you were bullied at school, 20 years later, hopefully you'll be all right.
That's what they should be saying in school. Yeah, the anti-bullying message should be, if you are getting beaten up, just hang in there for 2 decades. Yeah.
And then hopefully you'll get over it. Not entirely, of course.
Mind you, I don't know if anyone...
Why should you get over it? You shouldn't be bullied in the first place.
You definitely shouldn't be, no.
You sound like you're telling people to just grow up.
No, I'm not.
Are you getting bullied? Grow up. When in actual fact, stop bullying people.
That would be best.
They're the fucking bullies are running the fucking planet at the moment. They're the fucking worst fucking people on the face of the fucking earth, bullies. They're fucking awful.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you said...
I was bullied, you know, and I fucking hope each and every single one of them cunts dies a horrible death.
But as you say, they're not. They're mostly just in power.
No one I went to school with.
I hope not.
They're not.
No, a lot of them, actually, a lot of bullies peak at school. That was their only time when they had sort of...
If only they'd peaked at a book once in a while, they wouldn't be in the situation that they are now.
Good
hand. I like that.
I mean, I sort of worked out the rest of the sentence as I was going, but, you know.
It works out.
Yeah, but I think that... But it's like athletes, isn't it? You know, you're at your physical prime for, like, late teens... Mid 20s,
yeah, you're shot.
If you're
by
lucky,
late
over
20s. Yeah.
Early 30s, you're kind of like, that's it. Whereas, for the life of a comedian, you kind of like don't have anything to say until you're probably a little bit older than I am. So.
Yeah, unfortunately. So. Well, that Wozniacki, the tennis player, retired last week at 29. Imagine a comedian. Imagine if one of us retired at 29. They'd get a certain amount of stick, I think. But then, as you say, you wouldn't have done a lot by that point. Well, it depends who you are. You get some child prodigy comedians these days.
But I mean...
They still haven't got anything to say, though. It's true. I see a lot of really good, like, 21-year-olds that are... Their stagecraft is amazing, and you think you're going to be really good. But at the moment, all your material is about... It's annoying when you live with your mum, and your mum wakes you up early in the morning.
It's a difficult topic, because it always sounds like you're being mean about people. But I just mean it like... You can see people and go, absolutely brilliant, but I've got no... substance.
I see it a lot. I host a lot of like new act consciousness and stuff with, and comedians are getting younger and younger as well because there's like 16, 17 year olds, the whole industry. Yeah.
It's a job.
And you see people and think, there's no doubt you were really talented, but at the moment you haven't had any experiences apart from when your internet is down for 10 minutes. So all your stuff is about that. Yeah. Mm.
But that's fine.
It is fine because the 20s and 30s of your life rough you up.
That's how it goes.
Quite
significantly.
And then you'll have the whole package.
Also, we can't necessarily relate to that. But if you're 16 and you're watching it...
That is also true. I mean, the sort of
stuff... You grow up with people, don't you?
Yeah, there's YouTubers and stuff that have got 5 million followers and we wouldn't be able to make a single bit of sense of anything they're saying. But, of course, it's not for us.
But then part of it is also being able to relate to stuff that isn't necessarily specifically about you. Like, I grew up watching Jack D and he'd talk about his kids and stuff. And I think one day when I have kids, I will get that joke. And I'm still
waiting
for it. Still waiting to get some of them jokes from the 90s.
I've got kids. Occasionally I chuckle at a Jack D joke from 1998. And sort of,
just the memory of it.
Just the memory of it. I've got them all stashed. Yeah.
It's best way.
Who was your favourite comedian when you were growing up?
I didn't know many because... Actually,
when did you decide to be a comedian? Because you started off doing Welsh.
Yeah, I came out of university and entered open mics and stuff like that. So like 22 or 23 or something. But this is obviously pre-YouTube and also pre... Like there weren't panel shows even really. Part of those, I haven't got news for you, but... I didn't think of those people as being stand-ups either. I just thought of them as the guys you got on telly. So at the time I became a comic, I couldn't have named more than a handful, like Eddie Izzard, people who had videos.
But there were only
out.
Like five. There was like Lee Evans, Jet T, Eddie Izzard, Joe Brand.
You'd get, Lenny Henry maybe.
Fifth one, Harry Hill.
Victoria Wood, but even that wasn't quite the same thing.
Victoria Wood wasn't stand-up. But, well, I mean,
no,
I'm sure
not
she
in the same way,
out.
No. Like, the people, but that was it. Unless they had a Bank Holiday Monday special, I wouldn't know about them, basically. I only knew about Izzard because his videos, his VHSs would sort of do the rounds. So he was the first one that I saw live. But even then, when I saw it, because it's massive theatre, enormous sense of occasion, I would have thought there was maybe 20 people in the country doing that. At that point I had no idea of this like enormous infrastructure of, but also there's 10 times as much of it now as there was then.
More than that.
The number of comedians working now is
more than that. There's more comedians than audience.
There's more comedians than humans. Yeah. There's 4 comedians for every civilian in the country.
If all the comedians started saving energy, the planet would be all right.
Everyone else. If we just shut down all the comedy clubs, or at least installed meters so we can see. You could have, like, smart meters, but it measures the amount of energy coming from an audience and works out if the gig is sustainable, basically. And if not, then you just put all the lights off and leave.
Very rarely.
I mean, well, I've done my bit then. I've cancelled gigs all the time.
Yeah, just keep not doing anything, basically.
Well done.
It's the best thing you can do for the planet.
But then what you're saying about planes, I mean, I probably fly in a plane, otherwise my arms get tired.
It'd be a talking point if you were known to be flying around. Yeah.
I fly in a plane maybe once every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, not bad.
And it's just kind of like, but not that I'm deliberate. I just never go on holiday. So it's just kind of like, I think I'm entitled to go on holiday
in a plane
over my lifetime. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, I'm not getting on a fucking plane to the shops, am I? I'm just sort of...
No, that would be extravagant unless the shops were really far away, I think. Yeah.
But that's what Boris Johnson did, didn't he, when he was doing the thing? He got a plane...
He flew from Doncaster to Darlington, I think it was. Just,
oh, yeah. Wow. That must be in the air for about half a second.
You barely get off the ground. Yeah, it's more, you just go along the ground.
It just does it along a motorway.
But yeah. I think it was a 40-minute car journey. And then,
hour on the train, roughly, yeah. Yeah, stuff like that is insane. And this is part of the problem of doing anything eco-related, is we're all aware that a tiny number of powerful people have the ability to screw everyone else permanently. Because if a bloke with a private jet makes sort of 70 flights a year or something, then that pretty much, it makes it very difficult to say to other people, you shouldn't go on holiday to Italy anymore.
Yeah, but also it's kind of like the thing where, make sure you switch your lights off when you're not in the room and stuff like that. And then you go down to Canary Wharf on a Sunday night and it's all fucking lit up and you just think, what the fuck? It doesn't make fucking dent what I'm doing.
I find that difficult. With stuff like that, it's a bit like how you try and behave well towards people and then, like, the amount of human evil in the world is still a constant. Or basically, all you can do is look after your own stuff, I think, and not get too caught up in the global picture, because the global picture is quite sort of bleak.
And I think the other thing is you probably shouldn't have a go at people on a very local, individual level. I find that, like, it's all right to have a go at someone who is perhaps taking planes here and there and everywhere, but when it's having a go at someone, who might be going on holiday or who decides to have a baby or something, you go like, well, actually, surely we've got to go give them a break a bit and say, yeah, sure, that's entirely your choice.
We have to have the facility for human life to exist. Yeah, like, it obviously is true that if we cap the world's population today, that would be the best thing we could do for the planet. But difficult to say to everyone, no more babies forever, I think. Yeah, we have to try and find a way of living on the planet that doesn't involve us just all jumping into the sea. Although we might not have that option in 20 years because the sea is sort of steadily coming after us.
It's just weird because it's all just common sense. But not everyone has the same common sense. Not that they're better or worse, but not everyone has the same. It was like when... I'm sort of obsessed with this at the moment. I keep bringing it up, but it was like when they introduced plastic bags and people would charge, if you want a plastic bag now, it's 10p.
Yeah.
And most people were like, absolutely, I completely understand that. You're taxing us, and what we have to do is we have to take plastic.
I'll try not to buy a plastic bag every time. That's the point.
We'll reuse our plastic, the plastic bags that we have, and they've made them sturdier, and we'll reuse them, and then, because we're trying to cut down on the amount of plastic. And then there was the other portion of, I can't remember which newspaper it was, but it was either The Sun or The Daily Mail, and they said, they're charging 10p for plastic bags. We'll show them. We'll bring our old ones in from
home.
Right.
Yes. And you go, that's exactly the fucking point. Yeah. I remember the same article. It was going, this move will, if you add up all these 10p's, this will cost the average family like £75 a year or something. I was like, no, it won't, because the whole point is you don't pay the 10p. You just bring your own fucking bag. And as you say,
you have to do it.
You
have to buy a new.
You just think this is absolutely reasonable. 10p doesn't break the bank, but it's a cash reminder that you go like, oh, exactly. You know what? I shouldn't.
I remember seeing the pictures of those smug people with their own plastic bag. And we've sidestepped the new bag charge. Like,
you're a fucking idiot.
Exactly,
you're an absolute fucking idiot. Fuck it.
Stuff like that. People sense that they're being unfairly taxed on stuff and that they have to try and weasel their way around it. There are some people that spend all their lives just thinking about that, basically.
Yeah.
How can I
Oh, I'm getting one over on me, and it's just like, so I can't remember who it was, but I had a conversation with someone in the week, and they said it's absolutely amazing that we managed to get a smoking ban done.
Yeah.
And but everyone just agreed. It was that there was a date, and everyone was just like out there smoking, and everyone was smoking in the pubs. And then it was just like, and then at midnight, it was just like, you're not allowed to smoke. And everyone was like, fair enough. And people were like, we're not going to go, I'll stay at home. I'll smoke at home, and I'll drink beer from the off license. They didn't. I worked in a pub at that point. Everyone came in the pub, and they stood outside by the heaters, and they smoked outside. And you go, fucking hell, this is working.
Yeah, I think that's really, I think the smoking ban, I think about this a lot, because obviously with climate change stuff, that probably we're going to need actual big legislation, and people are just going to have to fucking suck it up. And people often say it's unworkable. But like you said, the smoking ban shows you, like, it's just because people, like people said, pubs will die, comedy clubs will, like, that our social life will be massively affected by it. But as you say, 5 years later, you watch films where people are blowing smoke across the table at restaurants, and it looks, like my kid is 10, and he thinks it's nuts if you see people smoking on a plane on an old film.
They
or something
used to
like
be
that.
Smoking in Wetherspoons. Because that's where I used to go to the pub. But the barrier wasn't a wall. It was just sort of like a rope. And you'd smoke on one side of the rope, and then on the other side of the rope, there'd be families eating dinner. And it'd be kind of like, how the fuck? It's insane. It's smoking on the underground, smoking on the tubes.
Doctor's surgery. Smoking in anti-smoking offices.
Smoking in petrol stations.
Smoking in the petrol station.
In the 80s, my mum took my brother as a baby on a plane, and you could smoke, but you had to go to the back of the plane and stuff like that. All right, that's fine. Yeah,
I was on a plane this year, and there was fucking ashtrays on the plane. I was thinking, fucking, how old is this
that's
fucking
amazing.
Plane?
Really?
Yeah, terrifying. It's terrifying. Time. You go, fucking hell, this plane. There's something I don't like about this plane. Oh my god, there's fucking ashtrays in the plane.
But that's interesting. What was normal? Culturally normal, even 20, 30 years ago, seems totally insane in another generation.
15 years ago.
Yes.
And everyone's clothes used to smell all the time.
You come back from a gig.
Yeah, you'd just be like, oh, it stinks.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to take all your clothes off immediately because you. And it'll be the same, I think, with this. With there'll be environmental laws passed, which everyone, like the Daily Mail, goes batshit about. And then in 10 years, people will say, what, you were just allowed to do that, were you? And certainly in 30 years, every law change seems mad to people until you've done it for a bit. And then now even big smokers would probably, most of them wouldn't make a case.
I don't think anyone, look, even if you're a smoker, you still acknowledge the fact that it's bad for your health.
Yeah.
And it's bad for other people's health. It's just a given. You just like, right, fine, this is sort of like, this is a trade. You know, I'll cut years off my life because I like to smoke.
And I think climate change will go the same way. Because when they started hooking smoking up with cancer, everyone was like, nah, this is bullshit, this is propaganda, all that kind of thing. And then 20 years on, everyone that held out against it is like, all right then. And I think this is what will happen as well.
That thing, like climate change has that thing now where they're trying to discredit scientists who are going, no, absolutely is a real thing. And they have that, had the same thing where they would have these sort of almost scientists who are employed to go, nah, I think it's perfectly healthy.
Yeah, they find a maverick scientist to go, well, the thing is, some smoking is good. And then 20 years on, that guy is just in a pub going, yeah, nah, they just gave me 50 grand to say that.
Yeah.
And that's the worry, that in 20 years, the Piers Morgans of the, like, these sort of opinion shapers are...
They're
retired in their mansions, and they're like, oh, yeah, I said a lot of shit I didn't mean, but that was my career at the time. And that does hold us back, that mentality.
We're a herd, and we're moving as fast as the slowest people allow us.
Yeah, which is a frightening thought when you look at some people.
Why are you dragging us back? Yeah. Why are you dragging us back? It's weird that in the last, 3 or 4 years, we've taken such a huge step back in terms of our social evolution that now it's kind of like, what, Nazis are a thing again? Racism is a thing again? Sexism and misogyny is a thing again? Why is all of this stuff coming back?
In the 90s,
because we were so pissed off about how fucking liberal everyone was getting that we decided to bring it back. It's just like...
Yeah, not long ago, you would have said the Nazis were done for, probably. It didn't look likely that they would get another go at that. But as you say, the idea of a backlash against liberalism is sort of amazing as well. We can all remember when the world was just appeared to have got its shit pretty much together.
I can understand smug people being objective.
Oh, yeah.
And I can understand far liberal. You know, when it's... when it's kind of almost as fascist as... When you're so far left that it's almost as fascist as being far right, I can understand all of that. But I don't understand how when it's just where compassion isn't the thing.
Yeah, it should be pretty possible to not have to be, you know, in inverted commas, far left, or to not have to be extreme, to just live in the vast majority of people who believe in human decency as a general thing. It shouldn't be that hard for that to be the motivating force behind all of our decisions, you'd think, for most people.
I can understand there's a thing as well, where I think often there's a knee-jerk thing that people have towards being told off.
Yeah, that's and I think a lot of it is just that.
Everyone goes, oh, I don't want to get told off for something. Whereas actually, if you just listen for a bit, you go, oh, that's totally fair enough. And a lot of people are reacting to this idea of people think of themselves, everyone thinks of themselves as being a fairly decent, nice person.
Yeah.
And if someone says, oh, you know, you shouldn't be doing that thing you're doing, it's almost the knee-jerk is to go, no, I'm a good guy, so I won't have this. Whereas actually, it's almost like you just take a step back. And also, if someone backs you up and says, if saying, well, actually, you really have to change lots of elements of your life to avoid climate change, and actually, we shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be taking as many holidays, shouldn't be trying to take more and more public transport, shouldn't be driving in cars.
Shouldn't be hiring Jim Davidson to congratulate Nigel Farage on national TV. That's fucking embarrassing. Everyone saw that.
But if someone else says, that's ridiculous, your brain almost wants to align with that person because they're telling you, you don't have to make changes.
Yeah, especially if you've been
eating
meat all my life. And of course, if you start hearing about meat eating being bad, instinctively you do think, yeah, but that means I've been a baddie for 40 years and no one likes
thinking
that.
I'm pretty sure I'm a great guy.
I'm a goodie. If you look at the narrative, I'm the central character here.
Yeah.
So surely, and that's the same with everything, yeah. And it's true. It is true. Our dread of being told off for stuff right from school, even if you're nauseous, you don't like thinking of yourself as, because you can't have a worldview where you yourself are the bad guy, obviously. So you'll do almost anything to protect your conception of yourself as the good guy. Mm. And people will fight quite hard for that. Unless you are a psycho. Unless you hate yourself, in which case, all bets are off, I think. Mm.
So I'm just like, oh, yeah.
No, I'm shit.
I'm a real evil cunt eating this chicken.
If you identify as an evil cunt, then it's a bit more difficult conversation.
I don't identify as an evil cunt. I just have a low opinion of myself.
Yeah.
So I don't walk around thinking I'm the hero of my own story.
So are you like more like one of these indie films where the bloke has to learn to love himself, or you're not even on that trajectory?
I'm like Matt Dillon in any of his films. a troubled loner.
Are you going to have a nice third act twist, you think, or...? Are you going to be an uplifting one, or are you just going to be one of these bleak films that get 4 stars but people don't necessarily feel good about it?
It'll win Oscars, but it'll also be called Leaving Las Vegas.
Right, so that's you.
That's me. I'll be the Elizabeth Shue character.
That's Fan Club.
We'll play a song. Should we play a song? Yeah, we'll play a song.
People do that on the radio sometimes, don't they?
What's your song?
It's The Walkman.
Oh, yeah, The Rat.
It's a great song, actually.
It is. I mean, people say banger these days, don't they? But if I was younger, I'd say it. Mm.
Well, brace yourself. This one's a banger.
10 of Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club, Paul Fuba Radio.
We'll probably need a new ident as well, so that we've got, like, not just the two. We've probably got, like, we change it up throughout the show. Thanks. Just thinking out loud. We're still in the studio.
Could have been a chat you had after the show, I suppose.
Wait, say it again?
You could have had that chat sort of off air in a way, but
I like to leave as soon as we are off air. I like to just zip right out of the building.
Here at 5 minutes past the hour.
No way, don't want to be wasting my time. Get it done now. We're still in the studio with Mark Watson.
Hi, everyone.
Can you tell us a little bit about what a smart meter is, because I don't really know what a smart meter is.
I didn't know until I got one, which is quite recently, and it took me a while to work out how to use it as well. But all it does is sits in your kitchen or something and monitors how much you're spending on your energy. So it's quite good if you're naturally tight, because you can see like how much the kettle boiling costs and lights out.
How much does a kettle boiling cost?
It's all right if you just, it's obviously negligible, but if you do what I do and forget you've bought it and then you end up boiling it 9 times, it starts to mount up a bit, and you do start thinking, so you save money quite quickly because you start thinking, maybe I'll see this cup of tea through to the natural conclusion rather than like, maybe I'll actually nail it first time. It is also quite fun unplugging stuff and watching the price go down. It's a sort of game of wit.
But surely it's always going up, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it doesn't go down. It's hard to see how you could get it negative, even if you actually unplug the machine itself, which I don't think you can do. But yeah,
you can gamify it, as they say.
You basically gamify it, yeah. So for people of our generation, it's quite fun, because rather than looking at your meter with all like weird like kilowatt hours and stuff, it just says to you £4, and you think, right, that could come down. And you start to become like your dad, being like, you know, your parents won't have anything plugged in. Everything is like, that's wasting. It's quite fun. It's tiny amounts, but it is quite nice to... I also quite like knowing how much the bill is, because almost all bills in my life, I never look at them when they, like phone bills and stuff. I don't really know. I just see the money disappear. There's a horrible day of the month when everything's gone. So I prefer it this way, I think. You just get it from your energy provider, and I think it's quite a good idea. But again, it's quite a small... But also, the idea is that if the meters allow them to sort of codify our general electricity usage, so then they can run the grid more effectively and all this sort of business. But
how does it even work, though? So what do you... How do you connect... Can you take your headphones off?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't
because
it? I'm not wearing the headphones. I've got mine on my neck.
You're rustling.
Yeah, you're right.
Your beard is rustling against the...
And also, I felt a bit weird having them around my neck. I felt like smashy and nicey or something like that.
Well, you can put them on. I feel like it feels like we're doing an actual job.
I know, it's just quite loud when
you've
got
them on. But you
don't
have to put them on.
Okay.
You don't have to.
I've got them on now, but it's weird because it means that you're only about 3 feet from me, but I can hear you incredibly loud in my ear.
Yeah, that's good. But my voice is very warm and chocolatey.
It really is, actually. Yeah. I'm enjoying this a lot more than I thought I would. Yeah, do you know what this reminds you of? Have you ever been on one of those motorbikes where the... a taxi motorbike? 2 or 3 times in my life I've done this.
I've actually declined that sort of thing.
Rightly so.
I think
it's
too scary.
I'm the sort of person to get quite anxious, so I've had to do it 2 or 3 times to get between shows or something. And the bloke that's driving does this, basically. He's in your ear in a big pair of headphones saying things like, it's going to be all right. And it is quite
sexy.
Right. It depends on the driver.
Is that reassuring? Or if you're already anxious, does it just add to it?
It's a bit of both. When he just says, this is fine, we're going to be there in a few minutes, that's reassuring. But now and again, he'll say something like, now, this looks like a really small gap we're going through, but don't worry, trust me. And things like that I don't like. I'd rather not have a commentary on that.
I'm just about to enter your anus.
Yeah, stuff like that. I don't think I'd want that necessarily.
No, but presumably it'd be interesting because he'd be in front of you. Yeah. So you'd be wondering how that was going to happen.
Yeah. You'd feel even more insecure than you already are on a motorbike. Yeah, this is why doctors and surgeons aren't given a headphone set.
I'd quite like it. Or do it
from not facing you.
Mind you, the equivalent is if you're having brain surgery, you can stay awake and watch that happening. Watch your own brain on screen. Because they sometimes do that on purpose so they can monitor the brain. That's my head. I think about that quite a lot. The idea of watching your own brain on a telly. So as they're going into it, you're using your brain to watch that brain being. It's a very unpleasant thought.
You're using your brain to watch your brain.
Essentially, yeah.
It's
like one of these things that you hear about. Isn't it?
That's like using bacon to as tongs to cook bacon.
It's like if you had a barbecue, but the tongs were themselves sausages. Yeah.
I quite like that idea, though. That's a fun idea.
That would show the vegans, wouldn't it?
That's what Piers Morgan does when he cooks.
Yeah,
his,
he doesn't just have meat, but all the implements are made out of meat as well, and his house is all made out of beef.
So how does a smart meter connect from, like, let's say, my oven and my kettle, and then how does
exactly how does it count it all? I've got no idea.
But surely it's the same as it that when you get your bill, so something's counting it, isn't it?
I suppose so. It's just instead of a meter counting it, it's just a little wireless device. Is it wireless? I'm thinking about my own. You've got one. Yeah, I have, but I don't really know if it's wireless or not, because someone set it up for me. Yeah, it must just tap into the same...
Into the meter.
Instead of having a meter in your toilet or something, you can actually see it.
So it's not connected to all of your devices. It's just connected to the one meter. It makes more sense now.
It's sort of talking to your devices in the mysterious way that things can these
days. No, it's not doing that.
I bet it is. It's in the ear of you.
No.
All it's doing is just basically...
So what you're saying
giving
is
you a read
these
from the
smart
meter.
Meters, they're spying on us, are they? I probably
better distance myself from that message. I assume it's just basically showing the same thing as on your meter, but in a way that you can understand what it is, and you don't have to get a man to go down to the cellar to... That's one of the big pluses.
Of course, you don't have to let someone in and have a look at your... thing.
Yeah, and sometimes you have the embarrassment of not knowing where your own meter is, and they're saying, well, they're often in your toilet or your cellar.
Or you point at one and they go, that's not it, that's the other
terrible.
One. And you go...
I'm entering your anus.
Yeah, when someone shows up at your door and says that, that's always a nightmare situation.
I sometimes don't let them in.
No. So then if they're just on the buzzer, you go, no, thank you.
No. I'll normally ask a few follow-up questions.
Is it flat C? Is that the right one? No, sorry, that's after B.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Well, good luck with him.
I saw you do stand-up in 2004.
That must have been quite close to the beginning.
We're at Sea Venues, but it wasn't Sea Venues. It was this little street down the side.
Oh, yeah.
You did it late night, and it was when you were still doing... You used to talk in a Welsh accent.
Mm, in those days I did, yeah. And me and Rod Gilbert did a Welsh show together at Edinburgh.
That's right. To be fair, though...
It was my first Edinburgh show.
And we saw
Rod stuck to it for ages. He's still doing it, as far as I know.
We saw... Me and my friend saw it, because you did it... I was doing theatre at the time. I wasn't doing stand-up. And I saw you... You know Phil Stott, don't you?
Phil Stott?
Yeah.
I do. Yeah, oh, that's right. I think we might have to... I was at university with him.
Yeah, and I did a show with his brother Rob... in the Sea Venues. Anyway, so my friend Ollie from my university, we went to see you, and we were there a night when you started talking Welsh and then you stopped halfway through.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm not really Welsh.
I remember that.
And I felt like, wow, we are witnessing something special here.
Yeah.
Unless you did it all right.
I only did that ever a handful of times. So that was, you did witness something special.
Yeah.
When did you start doing comedy then?
2000 and when did I? I still haven't started.
Sorry, yeah. When do you plan to start doing comedy?
According to Live at the Apollo viewers, I still haven't. 2006, I did my first gig, and then I started properly in 2007.
It's weird, isn't it? Now that we're in 2020, you look like when you said 2004, that does sound like a proper chunk of time ago.
Yeah,
and also, that song we played was, I think that's 2003 or 4. Mm. And suddenly, you can easily remember things that were 15 years ago, and you do start to wonder.
You admitted to not speaking Welsh well. Well, Nick was smoking a big cigar indoors.
On a plane, yeah.
On a plane. It's all so different now.
I mean, when I started doing stand-up comedy, I remember you could smoke indoors.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
I would smoke a cigarette, I would put it out, and then I'd go on stage. They'd call my name, and I'd put my fag out, and then I'd go on stage.
And from the stage, you'd see the smoke hanging in the... if you were emceeing, you'd see the smoke build up more
and
more.
Get on stage and just be like... Mark Watson, you know.
They used to be filthy places, really. Even some Edinburgh venues, you could smoke. You'd be in a...
Yeah, but they used to give out free cigarettes in Edinburgh. There'd be, like, the cigarette girls, and you'd be, like, having a chat with your family, and then they'd come over and say, do you want a packet of Camel Gold? And you'd be like, yeah, all right. And then You get like a free ashtray and stuff.
It was a different time.
It's weird.
Now they give out like samples of artisan pastries and stuff like that.
It's a good job. Edinburgh venues are such healthy places to sit in now.
Oh, yeah. It's a different world now. Yeah, yeah. No one's ever got seriously ill from sitting in a fringe show these days.
What's your favourite film, Mark?
I mean, this sounds a bit weird, but it probably is. It's a Wonderful Life, I think.
Yes,
Even though you only see it. Sure. Really?
Snap, absolutely.
Why not?
But it is obviously quite a sentimental choice, but I do...
No, that's fine.
I've watched it more than I've watched any other film,
I think.
That's fine.
That's all we needed.
This is the game, Mark. This is better or worse. You have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before, based entirely on my own opinion.
On your opinion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Beginning with...
They always say that.
Cuba Gooding Jr. Yeah?
Yeah.
Cuba Gooding
Robert
Jr.
Downey Jr. Better or worse than Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Better.
I think you think that Downey Jr. is worse than Cuba Gooding Jr.
Better.
They're both very low cards.
Robert Pattinson. Better or worse than Robert Downey Jr.?
Better.
I think still worse.
Better. Worse. He's worse.
Better. Okay. He's better.
Robert De Niro. Better or worse than Robert Pattinson?
Better.
De Niro better, surely.
Better.
Yeah.
Robert Redford, better or worse than Robert De Niro?
Oh, that's not easy. Redford better.
I think he's better.
Yeah.
Better.
Sharon Stone, better or worse than Robert Redford?
Worse.
No, I'll go better.
Worse.
So we're still on Redford.
Emma Stone. Better or worse than Sharon Stone?
Better.
No, I think worse than Sharon Stone.
I think better.
It's just because Emma Stone's not been around as long. Maybe,
she's been around a fucking long time. Zombieland was 2008, mate.
I take your point. Mm. So we're on Emma Stone.
Emma Watson, better or worse than Emma Stone?
Worse.
So still Emma Stone.
Emma Thompson, better or worse than Emma Watson?
Better.
Thompson better.
Better, yes. Yes.
Seniority, if nothing else.
Angelina Jolie, better or worse than Emma Thompson?
Worse than Thompson.
Worse. We're still on Thompson.
Sure, yeah.
Not just
Christoph Waltz, better or worse than Angelina Jolie?
Waltz better, I think.
Better?
Yeah.
Well,
I think that's a decent...
That's a weird one, though, to say that he's better, because he's only really done that one film where he was great.
Seven.
Oh, was that my score?
That's his score.
I thought you were throwing the film Seven in somehow.
It's Seven
about
better than...
Yeah. I'm surprised that... I mean, what the fuck is going on with this fucking screen, Natalie?
Is it...
What the fuck is going on? There's a picture.
Oh, yeah, how's that...
An upside down photo on it.
I mean, you've scored bang on seven, which is... What's going on?
It looks like it's about par, that.
Yeah, I know it's a tweet, but it's blocking up the top of the fucking... look, I've got to read them out.
But you can
so
see... You can see I'm level with quite a lot of other
can
people.
Yes, there we go.
All right, there we go.
So nine is
so
the
you
top
got seven.
Score.
You got seven.
Nine is your top. Ten would be... Best.
10 was best, but no one's got a 10 this year.
No, but it was.
Coming up to our second year. But you scored a 7, so you're as good as Kevin Allison, Joe DaCosta, Alistair Green, Lloyd Griffith, Max Halley, Harriet Kemsley, Kim Newman, Morgan McLean, Juliet Sear, The Last Skeptic, David Trent, Toby Williams, but you're not as good as Tom Crowley, Rhys James, Marsh Julius with 9, Omar Alaboy, Paul Gannon, Nick Desemlian, Naomi McDonald, Dan Schreiber, and Jasmine Torres with 8.
It's annoying because some of those were
But you're better than Bronte Barbie, Jay Foreman, Will Jackson, Ginger Johnson with 6, and... sadly, Original Flavour with 5. Nice boys.
2 original by the sound of it, in some of their glasses. Yeah. It's frustrating because I took a couple of gambles there, and if I'd played it a bit safer, I felt like 8 or 9 were within my reach.
You made some absolutely fucking insane decisions there.
Sometimes you do because you
Sharon Stone better than Robert Redford.
I just felt like.
In what universe?
Well, you know, potentially in Nathaniel's universe brain. That's the thing. I don't know his very.
No.
I do read you talking about films on Twitter sometimes, but it's a lot to remember, isn't it?
You say that. I know who's Vagina, I'd like to see more.
Well, that's what I thought the criterion was likely
Robert,
to come
Robert
down
Redford's.
To. Yeah, fair enough. Still should have gone for Redford.
I'd be intrigued.
The star of Arseholes at Night, Robert Redford. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That fucking hell. Who else have you got in it? Jane Fonda and Robert Redford in Arseholes at Night.
Arseholes at Night. Based on the book also of that.
Oh, same title.
Is it really?
It is. I got sent a copy of it by the same publishers as mine, and I looked at it and thought, and obviously it's an American title, yeah. I thought, well, that surely gets changed, doesn't it, before it comes out. That's
no
Someone saw it. Someone must have seen it.
Arseholes at night.
Huge decision. And even in American accent, it's not that different.
Arseholes at night.
It still is an issue, sure.
Arseholes at night.
Assholes at night.
Assholes at night would be a lot of American TV,
who's in
actually.
It? Yeah. Who's in it? These assholes. It's the end of the show. So your first date is when?
It's in May in Wells. And then
Wells? Is it part of the Wells Comedy Festival?
It is part of the Wells
Lovely
Comedy
Festival.
Festival. And
Lovely
then Shipping Festival. Norton in Oxfordshire, which is sort of Tory heartland.
You had your opportunity earlier to do all this.
Yeah, we didn't even know any of them.
The show.
Yeah.
So Wells is when it's starting. Thank you very much for coming in, Mark.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Everyone get a smart meter.
Food for food for thought. Vegan food for thought. What the fuck is that?
Foobar Radio presents.
What?
Is that right?
I think I've been slain.